It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. The suspect in a massacre at a historic black church has returned to South Carolina to face murder charges. 21-year-old Dylan Roth was flown back to the state into custody of the FBI from North Carolina in the southern U.S. He drove there after allegedly murdering 9 worshipers and wounding 3 inside the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston Wednesday. Police say Roth walked into the church and sat quietly for an hour during a Bible study before standing up and saying he had to kill black people. President Obama expressed his deep sorrow and grief over the shootings, and he linked the incident to the politically sensitive issue of gun control.
I don't need to be constrained about the emotions that tragedies like this raise. I've had to make statements like this too many times.
Federal officials are investigating whether the killings were a hate crime. Pope Francis called on the world Thursday to combat global warming to prevent environmental ruin to the earth. Roseanne Skirbel reports.
What the encyclical puts in print, Pope Francis told reporters earlier this year on a trip to the Philippines.
I don't know if it is all man's fault, but the majority is. For the most part, it is man who continuously slaps down nature.
The encyclical says the link between ecological devastation and rising inequality is undeniable. It says, quote, the earth, our home, is beginning to look like an immense pile of filth. Roseanne Skirbel, Washington.
Militants from the Islamist extremist group Boko Haram have killed at least 38 people in raids on 2 villages in Niger's Difa region that is close to the border with Nigeria. This is VOA News. UNICEF says at least 129 children were killed during a government offensive against rebel forces in South Sudan last month. UNICEF's executive director, Anthony Lake, says survivors reported that boys were castrated and left to bleed, while girls as young as 8 were gang-raped and killed. Leaders of the 19-member Eurozone will hold an emergency summit on Monday in an attempt to overcome a standoff over Greece's debt crisis, following a meeting of European finance ministers in Luxembourg that failed to produce any results. Both sides face a June 30th deadline. Lisa Bryant has details.
Eurozone officials urged Greece to seize a last chance in resolving the debt crisis, saying the next move was up to Athens. Eurogroup President Jeroen Dijsselbloem delivered that message at a news conference in Luxembourg after hours of inconclusive talks with the Greek finance minister.
It is really up to them to submit new proposals, additional proposals in the coming days. As of today, it is still possible to find an agreement.
European and IMF officials said they had been flexible, but the Greek government failed to offer credible proposals in return. Lisa Bryant, Paris.
The United Nations Security Council condemned Wednesday's terrorist bombings in Yemen that killed at least 31 people and wounded 20 others, hours before the start of Ramadan, the Muslim holy month. 3 mosques in the capital Sana'a were among 4 targets. The UN Refugee Agency says worldwide displacement from wars, conflict, and persecution is at the highest level ever recorded, and it is getting worse. The UNHCR released its annual Global Trends report, which says almost 60 million people were forcibly displaced at the end of 2014. VOA's Joe DiCapua has more.
The UNHCR describes the level of displacement as a dangerous new era that dwarfs anything seen before. Spokesman Babar Baloush explains.
It's really a sad reality of the world that we are living in today. What we are talking about right now is 42,000 people are being forced out of homes every day.
The Global Trends report, entitled World at War, says war, homicides, violent and sexual crimes cost the global economy over $14 trillion in the past year. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
More than 2,000 troops from 9 NATO nations are on the march in Poland. They are participating in the first exercise of NATO's new Rapid Response Force. Alliance leaders say they are intended to reassure Eastern European member countries troubled by Russia's role in the Ukraine crisis. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's military is to address accusations of abuses in the fight against Boko Haram.
As regards the fight against terrorism, the fight or rather the operation against terrorism and insurgency in the country is on course, and we're making tremendous progress.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usma is the spokesman for the Nigerian military. South Sudan's government responds to United Nations criticism of lack of cooperation. A Manute Bol Peace Builders basketball tournament gets underway today in Juba. And the South African government says it has every intention to meet Monday's court deadline.
As government, we currently are working tirelessly to make sure that we meet the deadline that has been provided to us by the court, that we provide a report of what happened and how President al-Bashir left the country.
Fumla Williams is the deputy spokesperson for the South African government. United Nations chief welcomes Pope's call for action on global warming, and new genetic research on seized elephant ivory finds major areas of illegal trade. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's military says it is ready to address accusations by Amnesty International that soldiers at the front lines in the fight against Islamist militant group Boko Haram committed human rights violations and extrajudicial killings. Amnesty International says since March 2011, Nigerian soldiers and militiamen have murdered, tortured, and abused thousands of detainees. But military spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usma says the military will not be deterred in the fight against Boko Haram.
We have continued to work on the directive of the President Commander-in-Chief for relocating the command and control center into the epicenter of the battle, which is Maiduguri, Borno State, Nigeria. So we have given ourselves timeline. We are busy reconstructing and installing infrastructure as well as information and communication technology facilities, which we hope to complete within the next coming 3 weeks. And once it is done, this command and control center will control all the operations against Boko Haram terrorists, and will also provide all the necessary interface with all the stakeholders, namely the other services, as well as the newly established multinational joint task force, which will come into operation next month.
What will this, equipping this center in Borno State, what role will it play with the joint base in Chad?
Definitely it is going to play a very important role, because prior than that, it was the division that coordinates, interface with the multinational joint task force. But now the center will do so.
We heard reports that the Human Rights Watch has recently accused the Nigerian military of extrajudicial killing, among other issues. How is the fight against Boko Haram, and when do you think the army will possibly address these concerns expressed by Human Rights Watch?
Well, you have just asked me two questions in one. Let me start from the latter. The Nigerian army, or rather the Nigerian military, will soon address that issue of allegation by Amnesty International. As regards the fight against terrorism, the fight, or rather the operation against terrorism and insurgency in the country is on course, and we're making tremendous progress.
So far in the Sambesi forest, what is the coverage? Because the army so far has been combing the forest, although there were reports of booby traps of explosives that these militants have placed that have slowed progress of the military. What is the progress report so far?
The progress report so far, what we did now, what we are doing is that we are moving gradually, even though the area is heavily mined, and we are making progress in the sense that it's destroying most of the terrorist camps, and we are narrowing on them.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is the spokesman for the Nigerian military. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. The South African government says it has every intention to meet Monday's court deadline requiring the government to provide explanation how and why President Omar al-Bashir of Sudan was able to leave the country despite a court order barring him to leave. A judge left open the possibility that the Minister of Home Affairs, Malusi Gigaba, and other officials could be prosecuted for aiding President al-Bashir's departure. Fumla Williams, deputy spokesperson for the South African government, says the government did not defy the court. Instead, she says the government has promised the court that it will investigate the circumstances under which President Bashir left the country.
The government has noted the court judgment and the instruction that it should provide a report within 7 days of the circumstances that led President al-Bashir to leave the country. As government, we currently are working tirelessly to make sure that we meet the deadline that has been provided to us by the court, that we provide a report of what happened and how President al-Bashir left the country. So, yes, we have all the intentions to meet the deadline on Monday next week.
The suggestion is that the government defied the court. Did you defy the court?
We have not defied the court. We have made an undertaking to the court that we are going to investigate the circumstances that led President al-Bashir to leave the country. At this point, I don't have the final report because there is a process that is currently underway where they are doing that investigation. And I'm sure all of us are waiting. We will hear the outcome when they submit their affidavit in the form of that report of what the findings have been.
To say you're going to investigate, then that suggests something, because as a government, if a foreign leader comes to South Africa, that's the responsibility of the South African government. How does he leave the country? Are you suggesting the government did not know?
Well, at this stage, we are doing the investigation, and I think it would be unfair of me to start making the speculations. There is an investigation, and once the investigation is out, we will be able to share it with the world and with the South Africans in particular.
Was the government surprised by this court decision or the court intervention in this issue? Did they embarrass the South African government, your court?
I think we have noted the report, the judgment, and we are complying with the court judgment and the recommendation that we submit a report, and thereafter we'll be able to take it from there. But at this stage, we cannot really comment on a process that hasn't been finalized in court.
That is well taken. And when does the deadline expire?
The 7 days is on Monday next week.
Fumla Williams is the deputy spokesperson for the South African government. She was speaking with me from Johannesburg. United Nations peacekeeping chief Hervé Lassus on Wednesday accused the South Sudan government of denying repeated requests for the UN mission there to use equipment needed to protect civilians. Well, yesterday, President Salva Kiir's spokesman, Atteni, responded saying the issue is one of sovereignty.
They cannot bring drones. Yeah, there's no Al-Qaeda in South Sudan. There's no any terrorists that they will come and deal with in South Sudan. So why do they want to bring drones? What is it that they want a drone to be brought to South Sudan?
Atteni said the restriction on UN personnel taking photos is a practical one in a country that is virtually at war.
We cannot allow our military installations to be photos. This is a universally practiced norm that military installations should not be photos or even to come closer to them, to inspect them. It's not allowed. If that is what some individual from ONUMIS mission does, then they are actually getting out of their mandate.
Despite the harsh words from Lassus, Atteni insists Juba is cooperating with the United Nations, although he insists there are limits to the UN's role.
We command their work. We appreciate whatever they do in support of the government of South Sudan, because the mandate of the UNMIS is to support and complement the government role. When it comes to the point of looking at the sovereignty of the Republic of South Sudan, anything that will undermine the sovereignty is not acceptable.
Atteni Wek Atteni is the spokesperson for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He spoke with the VOA fellow Tito Justin in Juba. Today is Friday, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The UN Secretary General has welcomed Pope Francis' encyclical calling for swifter action on mitigating climate change. International negotiations are continuing in the lead up to the final conference this December in Paris, where countries will aim to make significant commitments to lessen the impact of global warming for future generations. Viewers Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations.
The lengthy papal letter called on the world to combat global warming to prevent damaging the environment and ruining the planet. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has made ambitious action on climate change one of his signature issues since taking the helm of the UN nearly a decade ago. Mr. Ban has found in the Roman Catholic leader an ally in his efforts, and the two have met several times.
I thank deeply Pope Francis for taking such a strong stand on the need for urgent global action. His moral voice is part of a growing chorus of people from all faiths and all sectors of society speaking out for climate action. I urge all the governments to place the global common good above national interests and to adopt an ambitious universal climate agreement in Paris this year.
The international community will meet in Paris in December with the intention of agreeing a universal, legally binding climate treaty with the goal of limiting global warming to less than 2 degrees Celsius a year by 2020, when the deal would go into force. The latest round of negotiations just finished in Bonn, Germany. UN climate change expert Cassie Flynn attended those talks. She said delegates discussed what elements will be within the Paris deal and what will be in a series of decisions that will support it.
And within this discussion is the series of what are the levers that countries need to be able to achieve ambitious contributions to this global goal that we have set of 2 degrees. And what are the financial pieces? What are the capacity building pieces? What are the technical pieces that countries need?
In these 6 months leading to Paris, Flynn said discussions would focus on mitigation, adaptation, and the financial and capacity building components of dealing with global warming. Financing is a key issue, as countries agreed in 2009 to mobilize $100 billion a year from public and private sources starting in 2020 for mitigating climate change. So far, only 38 countries have announced their pledges for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, among them the United States and China, which together account for nearly a third of global emissions. The next round of climate negotiations is scheduled for early September. Pope Francis will address the United Nations September 25th and is likely to cover climate change in his remarks. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
There's a new weapon in the fight to stop elephant poaching. It is called genetics. DNA testing, which is frequently used to solve crimes, has pinpointed where most of Africa's elephants are being slaughtered. Viewers Joe DiCapua reports.
The African elephant is the world's largest land animal and is vital to the environment in which it lives. But the elephant population is shrinking fast as demand for illegal ivory remains high, especially in Asia. University of Washington biology professor Sam Wasser and his colleagues conducted the ivory DNA research. They tested samples seized by authorities between 1996 and 2014.
We are currently losing an estimated 50,000 African elephants a year to poaching, and there's only about 470,000 elephants remaining in the population. So that's about a tenth of the population being lost each year.
He says the best way to stop elephant poaching is to stop the demand for ivory. But that's a long, slow process. So Wasser says efforts must also focus on preventing attacks on the animals.
Their loss is already causing major ecological and economic damage in Africa, threatening national security. And again, if we do not curb the killing, we are really going to cause serious problems throughout Africa.
Researchers used DNA to determine the origin of large ivory seizures. They used ivory from 28 seizures. Each weighed a minimum of a half metric ton and worth at least $1 million.
The size and value of these seizures suggests that these are really involving large transnational organized crime syndicates. They're individuals that can afford to lose $1 million in a single seizure. And what is also important about these large seizures is they represent 70% of all ivory that is seized. So we're really talking about the majority of ivory being moved around the world.
Professor Wasser says over the past decade, nearly all the seized ivory came from just two places in Africa, mostly poached by organized crime. Ivory DNA was compared with DNA found in 1,500 elephant dung samples.
Virtually all of these seizures came from just two hotspots, one for forest elephants, which is in the Tridom area of Central Africa, and that's northeast Gabon, northwest Republic of Congo, and the adjacent Zanga-Sanga in Central Africa Republic. But the biggest hotspot was in southern Tanzania. Probably two-thirds of the ivory came from there.
Researchers say the illegal wildlife trade is the world's fourth largest organized crime. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Today, Friday, marks the fifth anniversary of the death of National Basketball Association legend and South Sudanese Manute Bol. To mark the occasion, young people from all regions of South Sudan will compete in a two-day Manute Bol Peace Builders basketball tournament. Achoy Chol is the wife of Nicola Bol, brother of the late Manute Bol, and one of the organizers of the tournament.
Because Manute Bol was a peacemaker, and the situation in South Sudan, I thought about that this is the time that using Manute legacy will unite us together.
The children that are participating in the tournament, are they from where? Juba or all over South Sudan?
All over South Sudan. It is actually all the South Sudanese that are taking part on this tournament. All tribes in South Sudan on Friday.
You said to give peace to their war-torn country. It must be frustrating for the young people of South Sudan, given that this conflict is going on. How do young people feel, and why do people like you, what hope do you have by organizing this kind of tournament?
The hope for this is peace. I want the young generation to put down the division and come together. So I believe that basketball can unite us. It can bring the young generation together in the court of basketball.
Now, talk to us a little bit about Manute Bol. I know he played a major role in making sure that the country we know today as South Sudan come about. Unfortunately, he did not see the independence, the referendum, and all that. So can you tell us a little bit about Manute Bol, the person, who he was?
Manute Bol is a man of peace. He loves peace. All his life, he has been committed to his country, working hard for his people. His dream is to bring better life to his people of South Sudan. Manute Bol would like this young generation to have better life, better education, better country. And basketball was one of his dreams as well. He put all his money towards this country to bring better life for them, better future for better education as well. I thought about it and I thought, let's be a torch for Manute to follow his footsteps and do what he loves. And I'm sure he would have been happy to see today how excited and how happy were the young people meeting in the court of basketball, playing together.
We understand that one of Manute Bol's teams, the Golden State Warriors, which in fact won this year's NBA championship, donated some T-shirts that the children are going to be wearing.
Yes. First of all, let me say congratulations to Golden State Warriors. Golden State Warriors donated 3 boxes of T-shirts, of their own T-shirt, to us. They really did well. We are very happy. We would like that Golden State support South Sudan youth basketball team with more teams for the rest of the future. And also, not only that, the 12 teams that are taking part on the Manute Bol tournament are very happy to say thank you as well to Golden State Warriors and to congratulate them for winning the champion after 40 years.
Achoy Chol is one of the organizers of the Manute Bol Peace Builders basketball tournament, which gets underway today in Juba, South Sudan. It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African Sports News, we begin with the volleyball. Tunisia beat Morocco 25-16, 25-21, 21-25 and 25-21 in the fifth place playoff at the Women's African Nations Volleyball Championships in Nairobi, Kenya on Thursday. Earlier on, Mauritius outplayed Botswana 17-25, 25-21, 25-19 and 25-21 in the seventh place playoff. Tomorrow Saturday, Senegal play Cameroon in the bronze medal playoff before Algeria challenged defending champions Kenya in the final. Turning to football, Mali plays Senegal in the bronze medal playoff at the men's FIFA Under-20 World Cup in Auckland, New Zealand, tomorrow Saturday. Later, Brazil plays Serbia in the final. Elsewhere, Cameroon encounter China in the second round at the FIFA Women's World Cup in Edmonton, Canada. In Namibia, the Council of Southern Africa Football Association's COSAFA Cup champions Namibia host Zambia in the opening leg of their Orange Africa Nations Championship qualifier in Windhoek tomorrow Saturday. Playing in front of their fans for the first time after winning the COSAFA Cup in South Africa, coach Ricardo Manetti reckons Namibia's brave warriors have what it takes to carry the day.
To keep the momentum going from COSAFA with this qualifiers, to keep the same momentum going. We're going to face our familiar opponents, which is Zambia. We met them at COSAFA. They are going to lose a few players because they didn't play their Chan team. We also didn't play our Chan team. So it was a mixture of professional players and local players. So that will be a very interesting game. The good thing and the positive thing for me is the fact that we will play them first in Windhoek. And we're very positive that we will get a good result there. And then we take care of the away match.
That was Ricardo Manetti, the Namibia Brave Warriors coach, speaking in Windhoek, Namibia. Elsewhere, in other Orange Africa Nations Championship qualifiers, Senegal play Gambia, South Africa engage Mauritius, Guinea-Bissau challenge Mali, Mauritania face Sierra Leone, and Djibouti play Burundi. Tanzania face Uganda, Mozambique play Seychelles, as Zimbabwe hosts Comoro Islands. On Sunday, Ethiopia welcome Kenya, Lesotho host Botswana, Swaziland engage Angola, and Morocco play Libya. Finally, in rugby, Uganda host Kenya in the return leg of their women's and men's 15-a-side Elgon Cup competition in Kampala tomorrow Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, June 19th.
Attention, please. If President al-Bashir of Sudan actually deserved an arrest, the Americans that deserted Saddam Hussein of Iraq and Gaddafi of Libya can please do the same. I am Prince John Bashir, Bendy in Obanibu, Kotorate, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. And that is it for this Friday, June 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jamin Cook, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the Internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.